Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Industry Summit Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined by Dan Flynn, and this is the fourth in a seven-part series of panel discussions from the inaugural Lacrosse Industry Summit held in Philadelphia prior to the 2016 Final Four. And today you will hear from some of the biggest names in sports, sports media, and the like, and they are talking about how to maximize growth potential. Dan, today we've got four folks who are familiar with lacrosse in different ways talking about the manner in which they see this sport best growing.
Terry, this is a great panel. It really is. Features Sean Bratches. He was the former executive vice president of sales at ESPN and a key person in the evolution of lacrosse on TV, especially ESPN. He played lacrosse for Bill Tierney a long time ago.
That's right.
At
yeah.
RIT, and you know, is really a guy who's a driving force behind what we see on TV.
Absolutely, and he was joined by Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney, obviously with the presence of Big Ten lacrosse coming to fruition in 2015. Certainly the league that has so often been conflated with a leadership position in all of college athletics, the Big Ten and Commissioner Delaney, by extension, are in a unique position to direct the future of lacrosse, particularly college lacrosse.
Yeah, Mr. Delaney is one of the most powerful and influential people in all of sports, and we were happy to have him serve on this panel, along with Nick Sekevich, the commissioner of the NLL, who is doing wonderful things in his first year in the job there, and Woody Thompson, executive vice president of marketing and events at Octagon, who has been a friend of Inside Lacrosse and helpful in some of our early events, our stadium events like the Big City Classic and the Faceoff Classic.
And also a former lacrosse player himself. So I was fortunate enough to moderate this conversation, and hopefully you enjoy it. If you do, make sure that you take a look at insidelacrosse.com/summit as we are preparing for the second Lacrosse Industry Summit held January 19th in Baltimore, Maryland, ahead of the U.S. Lacrosse Convention.
Yeah, this we've said all along, Terry. One of the reasons we came up with this idea is walking the convention floor and talking to all the exhibitors while we were also one of the exhibitors at the U.S. Lacrosse Convention, that audience, that group of businessmen and women needed a forum to discuss best practices, share thoughts, talk about the sport of lacrosse, the business of it, and how to grow that business. And it's really I'm excited that we were able to time it up and have it as a lead in to the U.S. Lacrosse Convention. We hope that those people and others will attend, and tickets are on sale now, as Terry said, insidelacrosse.com/summit, and you can get the early registration discount of $50 per ticket if you go there now.
You know, Dan, this is a type of event that exists in many different capacities all across sports and industry in general. And, you know, just a quick note, Paul Rabel, who was featured in the third of this podcast series, was a panelist in the inaugural Lacrosse Industry Summit, just appeared on another panel for a similar type of event alongside David Stern in mid-October. So, you know, just very exciting for all of us to see the influencers in the sport of lacrosse expand into general more mainstream and general sports media like Paul's appearance.
Yeah, and again, the Industry Summit, we've said it before, is a good opportunity to meet other people in and out of the sport who are speakers or participants or attendees. The networking opportunities are fantastic, and that's a good example.
All right, well, let's dive right in. So I hope everybody's having a great day. I have learned a tremendous amount already, and I'm very, very excited for what the next hour holds in store. The name of this panel is about maximizing lacrosse's growth potential, and I think that it's something that is, there's no more to the point way to say what we're trying to accomplish here today. Obviously, these are conversations to get objectives started and then ultimately accomplished. And with us, we have folks who, in a variety of different ways, are stakeholders in the sport. I mentioned Nick Sekevich. He's the new commissioner of the NLL, recent arrival to this position after having come over from Major League Soccer. Sean Bratches has already been referred to today as the champion of lacrosse at ESPN after a multi-decade career, which culminated as the executive vice president of sales and marketing. Commissioner of the Big Ten, Jim Delaney. The Big Ten is in season number 2 of sponsoring men and women's lacrosse, and there are 3 Big Ten teams competing in the semifinals this weekend, with Maryland and Penn State's women's teams playing tonight and the Maryland's men's team playing tomorrow. And finally, Woody Thompson from Octagon, who we at Inside Lacrosse have worked with a fair number of times over the years, and he can talk to the agency perspective of what the sport's potential is. Like I said, everybody is a stakeholder on this panel right now, so I want to start with that. And Nick, I want to start with you primarily because you're still in the first impression phase of lacrosse. So very plainly, what do you think?
I do like these suits that they bring home from soccer.
It's more, we got good suits in soccer.
Pretty good.
Yeah. No, it's more like drinking from a fire hose the last 4 months rather than in the learning phase. I'm just absorbing it all. I haven't spent 21 years in Major League Soccer and starting out trying to sell a sport to a country and in a country that it wasn't a primary sport to a bunch of people that didn't care about the sport. We learned a lot over 21 years. We learned how to survive. We learned how to grow. We learned how to collaborate. And I think sitting and listening to the previous panels and some of the dialogue last night at dinner, Terry, I'm hearing a constant and consistent theme of words like collaboration and unification and coming together and aggregation of assets. And these are terms that are consistently coming up in these discussions. And the one thing that I have for sure stepped away from in my last 4 months being a lacrosse guy now, and by the way, I do have a stick and I do think I can throw the ball a little bit, but my 2 soccer-playing sons are laughing at me. But what I've learned is that there's immense fragmentation in this sport, that there is a small pie, and everyone's trying to get a little piece of that pie, and that we've got to find a way as an industry to grow the pie, bigger in each of our own respects. So for us, it's fans, it's broadcasters, it's TV ratings, it's sponsors. To an apparel company like Under Armour, it's product sales. And this is really a responsibility that we all have. And we've got to come together to grow the size of that pie. I think that's a common theme. What I've done the last 100 days as commissioner is put a long-term strategic plan for the league. It's a 30-year-old league that has never had a strategic plan, which was quite remarkable to me. So part of that plan is also reaching out to key stakeholders, many of whom are in this room and others, to try to make the pie bigger, make the lacrosse pie bigger. I mentioned earlier in a couple questions I had, we've had an amazing year. Our attendance is up. We've had 19,000 in First Niagara and consistently tens of thousands in Denver, Calgary, Saskatoon, Rochester. But they never leave the venue, and they never leave the marketplace because we just don't have the vehicles to get it out there. And I think digital is going to play a big role in that. I think partnership with federations, with apparel manufacturers, with broadcasters, we need partnerships to create that bigger pie. And we saw it happen wonderfully in soccer over the last, really not 20 years of MLS. It's been a 40-year burn for soccer, even 20 years before MLS. But over that period of time, and I'm hoping it'll take less time for us, not 40 years, over that time you saw a coalescence of key stakeholders coming together, federations, pro leagues, manufacturers, equipment, endemic sponsors, so on, of non-endemic sponsors, coming together to grow the sport. So that's kind of a summary in a nutshell of what I've been doing the last 100 days or so. And I'm more bullish about the future of our league and our sport because the product is so just damn good to watch.
And Mr. Delaney, to you, a similar question in terms of for the Big Ten, lacrosse is still a developing entity. But clearly there was a level of attraction to it the decisions that you made in order to sponsor it were unprecedented in your conference, and I'm curious about how you and your office react to the early returns.
Well, we're bullish as well. It appears to us to be a growth sport, one. Two, you know, we're known for sponsoring broad-based athletics, maybe the most broad-based sponsoring agency in all sports. We have almost 10,000 athletes, student athletes. We've got 350 different sports teams, 28 different championships. And lacrosse is new to us, but we're familiar with it because on the women's side, we've won 10 of the last 11 national championships. And we have John Hopkins in the fold, and they've won 44 national championships in not NCAA, but other NCAA and other championships. They were sponsoring it in 1883. I think Rutgers came in 1887. Michigan came in 5 years ago. And really, you know, Ohio State and Penn State have been sponsoring it for a long, long time. But it's obvious it's no longer just a Mid-Atlantic state sport. It's coming into its own in the Midwest and also on the West Coast. And we're fortunate to be able to help it along. I think we've had 100 and maybe as many as 250 events, either telecast on linear or on digital in the first 2 years. And, you know, I think that people are watching. They love excellence. It's a center of excellence for us right now. I don't know how much more sponsorship there'll be, but I think there'll be more sponsorship. And I think we can do more as we get organized. We love to collaborate. We love to create events, whether it's creating the Rose Bowl 1947, which has grown into an iconic worldwide brand, or creating bowl tie-ins in the early 90s, or the ACC Big Ten Challenge, or the Pac-12 Big Ten something. You know, we're really looking for partners and looking for platforms. And I think going forward, you know, we're gonna push a little bit, and they are students, and it's fun to watch. It's got elements of a lot of sports, I think, but it's also a crowded marketplace for fans, and we have sports where there's immense amount of focus interest, but they tend to be more niche than broad based interest. But those niche sports can grow. And I think that there are ways to attract eyeballs and build following. And I think there are probably some real opportunities out there now as moms and dads make decisions about what sports their kids are going to play. And I think lacrosse is in a great place to take advantage of that.
And Sean, how do you react to that, having been able to trace the 10 to 15-year arc of the rise of lacrosse through, you know, mainstream and popular media that you were very, very close to?
You know, Nick talked a little bit about, you know, kind of growing the pie and you know, in the sport of lacrosse, and every, you know, a lot of people have their hands in that and trying to exploit it in a positive sense with the objective of growing. And, you know, Jim talked a little about the sponsor side. I think, you know, the key to lacrosse to me is audience, and particularly audience on the television side, which tends to be where the revenue is focused today. And the challenge that I think the sport's having right now is that, you know, the average rating for the, you know, through the quarterfinals of the tournament is a 0.07. It's down 30% from last year and on a household basis. And it's doing a 0.03 on an 18 to 49 year old demo, which is down 40% from last year. And, you know, it's from its peak in 2013, those numbers are down 50% and 60% respectively. So there's more interest from a sponsor side than there is audience to chase. And I think that until we evolve that and change the tide of the number of consumers that are coming into the world of lacrosse and it's repositioned, you know, you're not going to get the rights fees that are chasing, you know, Big Ten football or, you know, Major League Baseball or some of the other sports. And I think that needs to be elevated. You know, Rich Lunker does a sports poll, and he calibrates 33 sports every year. And as it relates to kind of fandom and avidity, lacrosse is in the penultimate position, you know, one ahead of cricket and behind rugby. And, you know, I think 16.7% of Americans suggest that they are lacrosse fans. 2.4% of Americans say that they are avid lacrosse fans, and 0.2% say that lacrosse is their favorite sport. So the, you know, so those are some stark numbers, but being an optimist, I think there's obviously a lot of room to grow. Causes in terms of the, you know, the avidity and fandom among Gen Zs, teens, and millennials, Hispanics, African Americans, and particularly individuals in large major markets, the trends are starting to kind of, you know, look very positive. So I see some encouraging signs there. One of the great ironies is that the market with the least amount of fan avidity in the United States is La Crosse, Wisconsin, which on the other side, it's Eureka, California, for any of you who've seen Sons of Anarchy.
Woody, you can speak to how to balance the audience chasing with what the marketers are pursuing. And I guess my question to start is, what's your perception of why, when it does happen, somebody comes to you in search of lacrosse, or probably more frequently in the instances in which a brand has been attracted to the sport, you've taken it to them. What are the key factors?
Well, first of all, I don't think anybody, in my experience, no brand has ever come to us and said, we want to get into lacrosse. They come to us with a specific objective. And I want to be very clear that we've recommended lacrosse to a great number of clients. It is not a reach opportunity, despite the best efforts of Mr. Bratches and the awesome work that ESPN has done there. We think it's a cultural thing, and we believe that a brand that gets into lacrosse with the correct and appropriate level of integration and messaging and authenticity has a chance to own a platform that reaches a very avid fan base and speaks to a very passionate group of people. But right now, we can't deliver the numbers. So there's good in that, because sometimes brands can't afford to go where the numbers are. They can't get into an NFL or an NBA or now even an MLS. So what we see lacrosse as is content. And we see lacrosse players and the whole culture around lacrosse as being something that brands can seize upon to tell their message and be a little bit more relevant to a specific audience.
You know, I think to Woody's point is that the demographic profile of the lacrosse fan is extraordinarily favorable. You know, it's college educated, high earning, young, a lot of disposable income, but it's got, you know, the NHL challenge where the audience is fantastic, but the numbers are very small.
There's no casual fan base.
Right, and one of the things that I see as a fan of the sport, which I'm encouraged about, is you look at a lot of major brands in the financial sector, Dick's Sporting Goods. They're starting to use lacrosse iconography, lacrosse backdrops, lacrosse players in their creative messages to reach consumers in new ways. So I think there's a lot of positive signs that are out there that are being adopted by very sophisticated marketers around the sport. And I think the trajectory is very good. I mean, you look at the youth leagues across the United States are exploding. And it's great to sit back and watch lacrosse on the Big Ten Network or CBS or NBCSN or ESPN and see the commentators talking about kids from all over the country where 20, 30 years ago, they was either upstate New York, Baltimore, or Long Island. So I think that footprint is positive. The thing I think is probably the biggest opportunity for the sport going forward are the conferences that haven't been in the vanguard, like Jim and the Big Ten, that don't have it. So the SEC, the Big 12, the Pac-12, they have smatterings of it. But, for schools like Alabama or LSU or Texas or Oregon or Oklahoma State to adopt it on the men's level and the women's level, I think that can create avidity that puts it a little bit more on a national scale, where I think it's still a little bit pushed towards the Northeast from a you know, from a historic standpoint.
And what's interesting about that is that when those schools start to sponsor it, I didn't know that yet. I didn't know that they sponsored things. They adopt and sponsor. But when those schools begin to sponsor it, people are fans. People are fans of schools. So, you know, Notre Dame was not, you know, South Bend, Indiana is not a lacrosse hotbed. It is now, but that's when they got good, people were Notre Dame fans, and they came along for the ride. And with all due respect to Richmond and Furman, it would be just phenomenal to see a Clemson get in. Or, you know, when I was in college, I played against Michigan State. And so, you know, where are they? I understand there's a lot of things that go on. But people are fans of those schools. The Michigan lacrosse fan wants Michigan to win. And he's a Michigan fan first, and he follows that school. And that draws greater numbers.
And I think some of the rivalries that are in the conference, like, you know, Michigan-Ohio State, which is, you know, if you look at on a global basis, is one of the kind of the world-class rivalries. And, you know, that extends beyond the gridiron on the football field. And I think that both teams with lacrosse programs, you know, that's going to be adopted and exploited. And, you know, if you have Alabama-Auburn playing lacrosse, and, you know, these schools, you know, respectively have, what, 50, 60,000 kids, and they have fan bases that are, you know, maybe equal to or second to, you know, some of the other conferences like the Big Ten, that's when this thing really starts to move. So I personally feel, you know, when the Pac-12, when the Big 12 and the SEC really launch programs on both gender sides, I think that's going to be a big mover for the sport going forward.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody, it would be incredibly foolish to dispute that, but when, as somebody who has followed a lot of these decisions closely, the factors that go into those types of decisions are so varied. And I think that what this type of conversation is about is how do you, as an entity, like a sport, make yourself most attractive? And it's not simply to sponsorship, but in with respect to a school or a conference adding, it's to sponsorship in terms of folks wanting to be associated with the sport, whether it's in a financial stake or in any other case. So I guess, Woody, you brought up a comment that I wanted to revisit, which is there are brands for whom lacrosse is an appealing option. What types of brands are those?
So I'll just point to the most visible ones that we see watching the tournament. And, you know, Old Spice over the course of the season. Old Spice throws its logo on college lacrosse broadcasts on ESPN, but I haven't seen a lacrosse-themed commercial from Old Spice or a lacrosse-themed promotion or a lacrosse-themed print ad or, any kind of web-based initiative. They sponsor the broadcasts. And the same with the NCAA sponsors. They're there. And Coca-Cola is probably here this weekend, but Coca-Cola is going to have like a pop-a-shot contest here. Unless things have changed, I haven't been to the finals for a couple of years. But they brought their standard activation to the lacrosse championships, and their standard activation was based upon what they do with the Final Four basketball. So the brands, I think the one that comes closest is Sector Spider. And they sponsor a club team in Baltimore. They advertise on the broadcast. They have some things going on the web, and they have a huge hospitality program for their customers around college lacrosse games. So, as Molly said earlier, you know, and she's the queen of targeting. So, you know, she whether she was at Learfield or the Eagles or whatever, she's very smart about who to go for and under what objective to hit them on. The financial companies, the people who kind of have grown up understanding lacrosse, knowing about it, I mean, that really is the trick. You need a true believer at a company. You know, the old days of my business, sports marketing, were if the CEO played golf, you could sell him a golf tournament. If the CEO was a sailor, you could sell him a sailing event. When people understand lacrosse and get it, is when they're receptive to that conversation. And otherwise, it's very difficult, and they have to be sold on numbers. And lacrosse is a very difficult sell on numbers alone.
I think you know, Jim can probably speak to this better than I, but my understanding is that, you know, lacrosse is one of many NCAA sports that is, from a sponsorship standpoint, is bundled and sold, you know, with wrestling, with softball, with others. So you look at an Old Spice, you know, they're actually buying and activating on a bundled NCAA sponsorship opportunity, where, you know, you have the college football playoff and you've got, you know, March Madness. Those are sold and marketed on a very distinct product platform by platform basis. So I think, you know, the opportunity for lacrosse, and, you know, this is an NCAA decision, I believe, is to, you know, how do you look at, you know, the value of it, the audiences around it. You know, it's the second or third, I heard on an earlier panel, largest attended, you know, NCAA championship. How do you kind of bifurcate that from the bundling of other NCAA championships, which may not, you know, have the same allure, and then the activation, the interest, the passion among a sponsor is that much greater. Otherwise, it's just kind of, it's folded in, and an Old Spice, for instance, is just not as interested.
Or perhaps another strategy would be to start with a professional league and see if there is an opportunity to get hooks into folks that are invested in the idea of the sport in general and try to usher them into the college game as well. And that's why, you know, I wanted to pivot to you, Nick, and I would imagine that you're at the outset of this process as you finish up the 2016 season and prepare for the 2017 season. But from a targeting and a branding perspective, what is your and your staff's approach at this point towards everything from identifying new targets, retaining those that you're already working with, and trying to deepen the relationship, the connectivity between your league, your teams, and your partners?
Well, media... Lacrosse is not a media buy, and it won't be for a long time. And it is a strong argument to be made that soccer still isn't a media buy. Nobody, to Woody's point, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I have to buy the National Lacrosse League, or for that matter, I have to buy MLS, although strides have been made there. So from a media standpoint, we don't need a television broadcaster to put our games on TV. We need a marketing partner who happens to be a television broadcaster. Yeah. To lift the sport, to create awareness, and it's pure marketing. The first 20 years of MLS was a time buy on national TV platform, and it was pure marketing. It was pure awareness. It was branding. It was creating awareness, and it cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and that's a big investment. So the initiative that we're focused on is, and we're going to take a lesson from that, and the advent of digital, I think, has made it much more cost-effective for us to begin to tell our story and to unlock the great fan experiences that are happening in our venues. I mean, our league this year, we averaged 10,000 a game. That's a real healthy number. I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. The people in Buffalo are aware of it. People in Calgary, in Denver, they're aware of that. But we need to put that fan experience, which is tremendous, and the quality product on that digital platform. So we're going to be investing heavily in digital. We launched a test in our playoffs, and we launched NLL TV in our playoffs. We got great reviews and doubled the size of our database just from four events. So we're investing heavily in the digital aspect. That's huge. Grassroots is another piece of it. And again, the sponsors that we're going to go after, we're not going to sell media because the numbers just aren't there. But things like digital access, owning a sport in that space, in the lacrosse space, and building out a robust digital platform, a grassroots marketing campaign, and grassroots initiatives. So the vision is 20 to 25 markets across North America in which we have NLL-branded or team-branded grassroots initiatives, camps, clinics, college showcases, so on and so forth, where we're really exposing our league, exposing our teams, and taking our sponsors with us at the grassroots level. That was a big... big benefit in MLS, having the grassroots components. Not a lot of leagues have a grassroots hook for sponsors. Soccer does. I think lacrosse also has one. And there's so much passion at that level.
And this is where that point about the culture comes in, because I think that the opportunity here is to tell stories. And there are great stories in the NLL. I mean, I might have a client that really doesn't care about Buffalo or Saskatchewan, but they may want to get involved in the content that you produce,
right.
And you know, I'm sorry to say it to our NHL fans, but you know, you guys have fights. People like the fights, and you know, there's great stories around that, and the rivalries.
Does this panel turn ugly?
No, you're fine. You know, New Canaan lost last night. He's upset. But I think that there's the culture that can be developed you know, I still view box, women's, and men's field as three almost separate entities. And I know you talk about fragmentation, and it's hard when they're kind of three different sports in a way, you know, joined by a common thread, which is a stick and a goal. But there's a culture that can be built up, and it exists in those markets that needs to be spread. And the way that gets spread is through sponsors and as you say, a good marketing partner. And people will understand that when Team A plays Team B, it's going to be a very intense thing. And it's the same way that's developing in the Big Ten between those schools. I mean, I'm going to be old school, and I'm going to forget that Maryland's in the Big Ten every time I think about it. But, you know, when I saw, the intensity with which Maryland plays Ohio State now in all sports, that's a great thing. And there's stories around that brands can jump on and become a part of that because it fuels fan passion. And that's what grows this stuff, not just simply putting it on air, having a game available. I mean, it's what Rabel talked about. It's more than what happens in the 60 minutes of the game.
And that's why investing for our league, investing in that digital platform, that OTT distribution mechanism is so vital, because in order to unlock, and I'll go back to the picture on the back of the program, in order to unlock this fan experience, we're not going to do it on linear TV. It's just not there, and the ratings aren't there. And we're years away from that. There's a strong argument MLS is still years away from that because the ratings aren't there either. But if for a brand that wants to really own a sport and jump in and capture I'd call it almost tribalism, almost cultish environment amongst lacrosse players and lacrosse people, the opportunity exists. And it exists in digital, and that's going to be a very, very big initiative for us.
Yeah. And Jim, just to revisit a part of the conversation that we referenced and touched on briefly earlier, just with respect to maximizing growth potential, I think, as we previously discussed, opening up sponsorship, creating buy-in among folks who currently are not invested, that's the definition of maximizing growth potential. So from your perspective, how's it done?
That's a great question. There's a lot of competition by advocates for different sports. We see it all the time. We put on 1,400 events, either digitally or in the linear network. In 1989, we had 67 football games. 10 were on ABC and 6 were on ESPN. And 50 went on telecast. So the world has changed. So you almost have to look at sports growth before TV, during TV, after cable, and now in a digital environment. So some sports really, don't care much about growth. It's sort of interesting. They're happy sort of where they are. They're not thinking about a professional league. They're not really thinking too much about grassroots. So I think one of the advantages here is that I think that there's some vertical interest. There's growth at the grassroots. There's a professional league at the top. And there's some growth in the college space. Colleges typically, move forward for different reasons. Could be a federal mandate. It could be the growth of a sport in a particular area. So, when I came into the Big Ten in 1989, we had 71% men and 29% women. Today it's close to 50-50. And so the world does change. In 1955, the top three televised sports were horse racing, boxing and bowling. So the world changes, and I don't think that there's, I think it's very difficult to predict what 30 years from now looks like in terms of fan interest and fan enthusiasm. I think lacrosse has some very interesting opportunities, some very interesting advantages. It's a sport that actually, in many ways, I didn't play it, but I sort of grew up around it in the East, and not only do I have three Big Ten teams here, but I went to North Carolina, so I got association with five of the eight. And so it'll be fun to sort of watch it all play out. But I think one of the things that we can do and that we do now in a number of sports is to find the opportunity sort of between the grassroots and the professional level, because we do have big fan bases, because we do have big brands, because collaboration is sort of hard sometimes, because you have to get people
into places on dates that they wouldn't naturally go to unless somebody was arranging it to occur. And you have coaches who have competitive interests. You have athletic departments who have sponsorship interests. You have people fighting for the television. You have to have a friend at BTN or ESPNU to help you a little bit. And so there's a lot of connection going on. But I think that the colleges are sort of between, well, they are. They're sort of between what's happening at the national professional level. The grassroots, we don't have much touch with, but we can have more touch with it. So, for example, if there were four Big Ten teams playing four Pac-12 teams in the Rose Bowl, and you played on a Friday and a Sunday, and then you had something going on Saturday, in Los Angeles, that could be a huge event because you're combining a historic venue, you're taking two conference brands, you're taking teams that people are familiar with, and we both have our networks. You put that together, that's more than any school, any local team, any single professional team could possibly do because you're taking a conference that goes from the East Coast to the Colorado border, another conference that goes from Mexico to Canada, and you're putting them in a historic venue. And if you could do that once a year, and if you saw five or six of those things happening in different places in the country, you're going to get some reaction. You're going to get some marketers involved. You're going to get some connection from the casual fan because they're going to say, what's going on at the Rose Bowl? Why is UCLA playing Michigan? Why is Penn State playing Cal? So I think that we're sort of uniquely positioned because we're not for-profit. These programs do not pay for themselves. But because we're successful in other areas, we're able not only to provide the playing opportunities and the educational opportunities, but also we're not there to grow lacrosse, but we're here, we might as well grow lacrosse. And so if you're in it and you're a competitive person, you're going to want your conference to do well, you want your teams to do well, and you want to see healthy sports get healthier.
I have that idea? Like I really like that Rose Bowl idea. Yeah, we might have to talk a little bit more about that one offline.
Yeah.
The getting back to the central nugget of maximizing growth potential. There's so many vested interests, so many parties involved. We spent a lot of time talking about broadcasters, sponsors, obviously. Organizations, whether they be professional leagues, conferences, national governing bodies, that manage and are the umbrella over which events occur. One of the things that we haven't talked that much about on this panel, but it's been discussed a lot today, is just in terms of the player's perspective, the player's fun. We ended the morning keynote talking about the danger of early recruiting and the aspirational component of playing lacrosse. And I guess because each of you have such a unique perspective both on this sport as well as so many other sports, I wanted to get your sense of what is your opinion of how we know the growth rates at the grassroots level, but do we know as well as we could why they're occurring? And I'm just curious on each of your opinions, and kick it to you, Sean.
I think it's a great game, and I think it's if you kind of look at the kind of the natural arc of a lot of sports, these things tend to be contagious. Rabel talked on the prior panel a lot about digital media, and I think the youth of America is being exposed to things in very different ways when bowling was one or boxing was one of the top sports in 1955. I think the opportunity to engage in a sport like lacrosse, in the same season as baseball is perceived to be attractive to a lot of young males, and then the introduction of the women's game is, and that applies to many different sports and disciplines. Just the opportunity wasn't there, or there weren't alternatives there, or as many, 1955 and as the arc played itself out. So I just think it's a great game. It's being marketed more heavily on a national level. Colleges are picking it up. People are being exposed. I can't tell you how many times I go around and say, I never saw lacrosse until I was 25 or until I went to college. And I think that's starting to change. And many of my friends who've never seen it, their kids all play. And so I think that's, mm-hmm. That's working to our favor.
Yeah.
I grew up on Long Island, and my brother was a really good player, and I was fairly mediocre, but I grew up longing to be a lacrosse player at my high school. And I was able, because it was a time in the 70s when sport wasn't that big, I was able to play in college, and, you know, my nephews played and my son played. But if I'm a kid in California, I probably play because my dad didn't. And then this has happened in a lot of places where it's almost like a counterculture thing. And it's skateboarding with rules and a stick. And again, I'm a little bit of a repeat here, but it's developed a culture, and it's developed kind of a thing on its own in these new hotbed markets that I think gives us a huge opportunity to build a different style of approach to the game, as opposed to prep school, Northeast, Baltimore private schools, Long Island schools. There's a whole world of why kids play lacrosse, and it doesn't necessarily have to do with because that's what you do where I grew up.
I mean, I think to Woody's point about culture, you know, you look at any company, any organizing body, any business, you have culture carriers within those entities that foster, you know, whatever the beliefs are. And I think as people have moved west, Long Islanders, you know, Baltimore folks, people from upstate New York, they've actually taken that culture that they grew up with and started youth leagues and were very proactive about it. And I think, then you can go into a Dick's Sporting Goods and, you know, there's a couple hundred square feet of lacrosse equipment in California, in Colorado, in Texas. So the accessibility, combined with the fact that, you know, you're people are a little bit more transient today and they're taking their passions with them, I think has added a lot to it.
And I suppose lastly, and then we'll open it up for questions. We've got a couple of folks that have to have a hard stop in about 20 minutes. What you and I spoke about, the idea of a pinnacle event experience, and it was something that has been referenced a couple times. Tiffany talked about it with respect to the NCAA and what they try to build. Obviously, there's been a lot of reference to the event experience with respect to the NLL and how fun and exciting it is inside the arena. One of the comments that you made that I found most interesting was how important it is for that access point from, you know, particularly on the brand side, and particularly on the side of folks who are unfamiliar with it but make influential decisions. What's your perspective on what more could be done to provide those types of pinnacle experiences?
Well, as much as I love the Rose Bowl idea, I shudder to think of that gigantic venue with 9,000 people in it. And all 9,000 may be rabid fans and excited to see the games. Let's give them a break. Maybe it's 20,000, but that's a 100,000-seat stadium. I love the fact that a kid gets recruited to Ohio State because he wants to play in the Shoe, but when I see a game in there and there's nobody there, it makes me go nuts. People want to be a part of at a sporting event especially, you want to be a part of something that is buzzing. And whether you go to the U.S. Open Golf, or whether you go to an NBA game, or whether you go to, I mean, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia in 1990, and I'd never been to a college football game. And I went to see Alabama-Auburn in the Iron Bowl in Birmingham, and I was like, what is happening here? I'd been to NFL games. That's what people want to be a part of. So when you have 18,000 people in an arena in Buffalo and the excitement is flowing, that's what your customers want to come to. That's when you can bring people to a luxury suite and have them meet players before the game and have them have some kind of an on-field experience, and they're going to remember that, and they're going to talk about that, and you're going to be able to close business because of that. And that's what I think, that's that high-end experience. You know, when you see the 18th hole at a PGA Tour event and it is lined with hospitality tents, those people have paid, those corporations have paid a great deal of money to do that because it's a very rich atmosphere. And I think that the golf audience and the lacrosse audience can exist on a similar plane. We just have to deliver, and I say this mostly about the MLL. It's very difficult to go to Hempstead, Long Island to see the Lizards play and really feel like you're part of a special event. Hey, Freddie. Good. We went to high school together, grew up together, so it's very exciting.
Yeah. I'm doing well. How are you?
I would agree and disagree. I would agree you do not want to have competition mismatches between fan bases and venues. But I would also tell you that in building a brand, to be able to take a nascent brand and put it into, and it may not be the Rose Bowl, but I know this, we probably get 6,000 or 8,000 for a hockey event. We get 110,000 at Michigan when Michigan plays Michigan State, okay? We take a basketball game that would normally get 14,000, and you take it to Ford Field with Kentucky and Michigan State, and you get 67,000. So I prove me wrong.
I would love to be wrong.
I take your point, and I think it's a good point because I think that women's basketball is not well served by playing in a stadium that's built for a fan base of 15 or 20,000. Women's volleyball is incredibly well positioned because they stayed in what was the old women, the old smaller venue, and it's intimate. But I think you have to distinguish where they play on a regular basis and a special event.
Okay.
So if you were to take a special event, yeah, I don't know that you can fill it, but I would tell you that there's value to get an association between an event and a venue.
Or you need good cameramen to shoot around it.
You know,
but, you know, when you looked at Yale play Navy in New Haven, or you looked at the Providence games last weekend, and you know the environment there, you know, as a television consumer, you were engaged. And a week prior at Maryland, where you were in the football stadium.
Yep.
You know, you kind of, I think consumers, viewers question, you know, they value their time, and when they come across a product on television and they see empty, seats, they say, well, you know, this must not be that big of an event if other people aren't going to it and engaging and driving it. So, you know, from a television standpoint, we've always found that, you know, when the stadium is full, there's energy, it makes a much better viewing experience. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean,
you guys have right-sized your stadiums over your.
Well, we play in great venues. You know, I've seen the movie of playing in Giant Stadium and having 20,000 soccer fans in an 80,000 seat venue, and it just doesn't look good. And it's a played on football gridiron, and it's not authentic. And you know, this all goes back to the fan experience. And what I've learned over my time in sports at the team level, operating at the team level, is you've got to let your fans take you where they want to go. You've got to channel them and guide them and move them in a direction. But you can't force feed them, especially this new millennial generation and the Gen X and Gen Ys that are their parents now. You can't force feed them. It has to be authentic. It has to look real. And what I love about our league is we play in some great venues on a proper floor, and it looks like a proper lacrosse event with great athletes and great in-game entertainment, food, parking experience. All of that, I think, plays into creating that great event, and that resonates on TV. And for us as a sport, because we're a new sport, we're a nascent sport, what we have to translate on TV, be it linear or over-the-top digital, is that we have to capture that experience and put it out there. And that's the frustration that I've had with the NLL, is because we haven't had that platform. We're going to have that platform. But in anything you do, you got to give the fans an authentic experience. And I built two soccer stadiums. It transformed both teams. It absolutely transformed both teams.
Now,
excuse me. I hate to be a contrarian, but I've seen... you have to distinguish an event from a regular game.
From a happening.
You have to create a happening as an isolated, singular, marketed event, and it may fail, or it may succeed.
Well, a great example where it succeeded, I think, is the NHL's Winter Classic.
That's what I'm saying. Then it becomes rote, and then it becomes less effective. But I would tell you, 25, more than 30 years ago, we couldn't figure out a way to get basketball on television in the Ohio Valley Conference. We couldn't weave a network together because television networks, stations were only interested in a local game. And I had quit because I had gone to every station manager. Some of the people making decisions were weathermen. Some of the people were general managers. But I had stopped doing it, and I was in an office with the general manager of the CBS affiliate in Lexington, and we were just chit-chatting. We were talking about Kentucky basketball. I said, what happened in 1950 when they went on probation and couldn't be on TV? They said they put the game on at 11:30 11:30 at night on a replay, and it did phenomenal. I said, well, what would your station do if there was live television games at 10:30 Central, 11:30 Eastern? He said, we'd clear it. Everybody cleared it. So they said, nobody's going to come to your games at 10:30 at night. We tripled our attendance. We went from 3,000 to 9,000. And then we eventually put it on ESPN.
You stole a lot more beer.
Well, we used to have nightgown parties and dance contests. But the point, my only point is if you you know, there's a difference between a created event that maybe is not repeated, a special event, and Rose Bowl probably maybe is not a great example with 100,000. And you have to right-size your stadium, and stadiums are better small than large. I get that. But what I'm saying is that I think if you're going to try to capture the imagination of the casual fan, you have to create an event that basically can be marketed in a way that every other game is not marketed.
Well, you make a great point, because the singular event, the one-time event, the quote-unquote circus coming to town, is a different marketing challenge than 9 or 18 or however many games your particular sport plays. In our case, 18 games, 9 home games. You're trying to get the crowd back. You're trying to get retention back. And retention is about experience. If it's a cool experience and it's fun and there's great product on the floor and a great experience, that's retention. That's when season tickets renew. That's when people come back and say, hey, that was cool shit. I want to go see that again.
You know, I got to imagine one of the biggest problems with attendance and ratings in the spring with college and MLL is kids are playing. And, you know, the MLL does a decent job of putting games on at night. I mean, and there's a lot of discussion about where this tournament should be, both on the calendar and on day part. But, you know, the number of people that don't go or don't watch because they're playing is staggering, because it's a very short window, especially in the Northeast.
Soccer struggled with that for many years until a whole generation of people who were non-playing turned into viewers and participants.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, it's people think lacrosse fans come to our games. 60% of the NLL fans never played lacrosse.
Right.
40% of our fan base are lacrosse. 60% of that 10,000 on average game are non-lacrosse fans.
Yeah,
so they're coming back for the event.
Going back to kind of, you know, follow the money kind of thesis is that, you know, I think one of the big opportunities is our game windows. So right now, the networks or the colleges play their games in the same window where the youth leagues and the high schools are participating, and that's kind of a target-rich audience for them. And creating a specific night of the week or two nights of the week where lacrosse can play and people can find it, I think is really central to the future. I mean, you go back and look at Sunday afternoon was the only time that the NFL played. Now they play on Thursday nights, Saturday nights, Sunday nights, and Monday nights. College football, I think other than Sunday night, Jim, are playing every night of the week. And it's one of the things, I think it's incumbent upon the networks, whether it's, you know, CBS, NBC, ESPN, Big Ten Network, whomever, to engage the schools, the commissioners, the conferences, and the coaches while they're developing their schedules, while they're talking to you about budgets and travel, and get people to play on a Wednesday night on a regular basis that can be promoted in a time period when this audience is actually available to consume the content that they love. And once you start developing television audiences, that's when this thing starts to click as it relates to material revenue. And that revenue gets re-input into marketing, re-input into technology and innovation as it relates to the production of the game, promotion, everything else around it. So I think windows are a real central thing that the business needs to look at.
And I remember when ESPN, you experimented with the Wednesday nights, and it was a really exciting prospect. And you know, got to tip the cap to the Big Ten Network for promoting Sunday night lacrosse, which I think has been pretty successful over the course of the last couple of seasons.
When we did our late night effort in the middle 80s, we took off, you had SNL, Saturday Night Live, and ours was Friday Night Live. And so it was all on the basis of even though it was an odd time, it was the only live programming on sports at that time, and it was played off Saturday Night Live.
Very creative.
And so you just need to find, whether it's a singular event or whether it's a regular season event, the right venue, the right time, the right partners, and the right collaboration.
Absolutely. Well, I think we have a couple minutes for questions, so I'd like to open it up.
Hi, Olivia from Bequipped. Woody, this question is for you. You said lacrosse is a difficult sell on the numbers. Now, is that because they're not the right numbers or because we don't have enough numbers?
It's not a reach vehicle. You know, when we talk to clients about sponsorship, quite often we're talking to very media-centric people. And they're used to, you know, a ratings point delivery. And they're used to, well, I have to reach this audience with whatever message they care to do, to put out there, care to do. We believe that if you're going to sponsor something, the most underutilized asset that you invest in, and this goes for every one of my clients, no matter how many sophisticated they are, how sophisticated they are, is intellectual property. So it's not a reach vehicle, as I've said before. It's about the content and the ability to shine your brand message through a lens that is a little bit more relevant to an audience that understands and lives through that particular activity as one of their passions. So lacrosse is just, it's not a reach vehicle. We're not going to be able to deliver the numbers of people that make those media people sleep well at night. But we can give you the platform to create a compelling message that could potentially differentiate your brand from another.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, it's not a reach audience through traditional media vehicle. Like soccer, where the sport I came from is the same thing. But that's why the other vehicles you create are important to reach that audience. So, for example, if a brand wants to reach the lacrosse demographic, we've got to give that client certain new vehicles to reach, i.e. grassroots, digital platform, a robust database of names that are can be targeting a brand right at the lacrosse community. Traditional ratings points, we're not selling ratings points.
And people want us to win. I mean, there's enough people either running companies or running marketing that, you know, that have an attachment to the sport that are rooting for lacrosse, that are looking for opportunities to kind of invest their brand in the sport to grow. So, I mean, we're given the benefit of the doubt more so than not. But, you know, I agree with Nick and Woody here as it relates to, you know, where the numbers are and how that falls out.
Time for one more question.
Yeah, Sean, you mentioned the opportunity for growth in, like, the Pac-12. But, Jim, how realistic is it at all for any big-time school, either the Pac-12 or Alabama's of the world, to even consider adding lacrosse to their mix? I mean, it seems that the trend is putting every available dime back into revenue-generating sports. But yet, if you could add lacrosse in some of those markets, it would be a huge explosion for growth.
I think there are five Pac-12 institutions that sponsor lacrosse, women's lacrosse today, and I think Arizona State may be considering it, so that would be six. They play in another sponsoring organization, so if they had six, you'd have a Pac-12 lacrosse championship. You know, there's 179,000 athletes playing in Division I, and there are some sports that are losing traction, and there's some sports that are gaining traction. The reality is there is a mandate to make sure that there's balance and that there's opportunities. And so those decisions are not easy ones. Some have great resources. Some have very modest resources. So as you have growth, it makes it easier in your neighborhood, in your state, and in your region to add. And as, you know, and as sports lose traction, it makes it more difficult to sustain them. So I think the trend line is probably long-term a good one, but it's a difficult one always to add.
I mean, Richmond's an interesting example. You know, they dropped men's soccer and track and or field and added lacrosse 2-3 years ago. So it's, I mean, to Jim's point, you know, there's precedent there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. It is certainly a very interesting trend. And you know, as you see the development of women's lacrosse, particularly at the Division I level, diverge in some capacity from the men's lacrosse growth rate, my opinion is, you know, at least for the time being, to embrace and help cultivate the types of programs that are adding men's lacrosse at the Division I level in such a way that that will help facilitate going forward, so that the milestone between BCS conference programs adding is not 30 years apart as it was between Notre Dame and Michigan. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for your time. I want to thank everybody for your time. It was great.
All right. Good to meet you.
Good seeing you.
Thank you.
Good luck this weekend, but the odds are for you.